This is edition number 1965 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 2nd of May 2025. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today, we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 1st of May, 2025. My name is Cynthia Gosling, and my fellow readers are...
Adrian Allenby.
Kate Harris.
And Lorna Wilson.
On the notice board today, this week, the sun will rise around 5:15 and will set at about 8:30.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes thoughts and memories from VE Day 1945, as well as our usual visit to Book Corner.
But we begin with the main news items, which include anger over high-paid roles at hospital, recommendations after review of murder-suicide case, body of hotel porter discovered, and an ambulance call handler found guilty of a raft of sexual offences. Let's start with those lead stories.
A major management shake-up of Norfolk's three hospitals will see the creation of at least four positions, with bumper six-figure salaries, it can be revealed. The Norfolk and Waveney University Hospitals Group was formed earlier this year as part of an effective merger between the Norfolk and Norwich, James Paget and Queen Elizabeth Hospitals. The move has created a single decision-making body for the three hospitals, under a single chief executive, confirmed last week to be Leslie Dwyer, the current CEO of the Norfolk and Norwich. Local NHS bosses have declined to reveal the salary Professor Dwyer will be taking home in her newly created role as Group Chief Executive. But it is expected her post will be one of at least four newly created roles within the shake-up that will collect six-figure salaries. While the three hospitals are set to share Professor Dwyer as chief executive, each site will have its own executive managing director, who will oversee the individual sites on a day-to-day basis. NHS bosses have confirmed that these posts, as well as Professor Dwyer's, will be very senior management, VSM rules. And while these roles do not appear on NHS pay scales, with a new framework for VSMs expected to be published imminently, the current average salary for these roles within the organisation is around £140,000. Professor Dwyer, however, is currently understood to earn around £250,000 per year in her role at the NNN. And across the three sites, there are currently 10 executives earning more than £150,000, four each at the NNN and Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and two at the James Paget. The bumper salaries have angered union representatives, particularly coming at a time when the hospitals are planning to make hundreds of job cuts in non-clinical roles. Caroline Hennessy, head of health at Unison Eastern, said, "Staff are coming to terms with proposals for major job losses in Norfolk. A mass reorganisation of NHS services in the area, on top of that, won't reassure workers or patients. Any cuts to workforce numbers will have a major impact on the ability of health staff to give the treatment and care the community deserves. Spreading resources more thinly with a management shake-up is not going to improve patient care nor make staff feel valued.
A review into the death of an 83-year-old woman killed by her husband, who then took his own life, has prompted a string of recommendations to help prevent similar tragedies. The bodies of Helen and Alexander Laurie were found in the conservatory of their home in the Warren, Cromer, in April 2022. An inquest found Mrs. Laurie, aged 83, who died of head injuries, had been unlawfully killed, and Mr. Laurie, 84, had died by suicide. The inquest heard Mrs. Laurie's health had been deteriorating, with problems with mobility, speech, eyesight, and dementia. Her husband had been caring for her. Her death prompted the Norfolk Community Safety Partnership and the Norfolk Safeguarding Adults Board to review the circumstances to establish what lessons could be learned. The review, which anonymised the names of the Laurie's, found there had been instances of a lack of professional curiosity among organisations which the couple, who had been married for more than 60 years, had been in contact with. An example the review gave was when, during a health assessment in May 2021, the pair were recorded as having mentioned Dignitas, the Swiss organisation which assists people with life-limiting illnesses to end their lives. The review found this information had been given to the pair's GP, but no further action was taken and it was not shared with other organisations the couple were in contact with. The review report stated that health and social care practitioners did not identify the pair were at risk of suicide or of homicide/suicide. It stated, "This review has highlighted that practitioners should be aware of the link between a person considering the use of Dignitas as assisted suicide and their intentions to complete self-inflicted in the future. Whilst there was no evidence of physical or emotional abuse within the relationship, the review said Mrs. Laurie was not provided with any opportunities to discuss any fear of risk of harm from her husband, as he was present for all her appointments. The review also found Mr. Laurie had been concerned about the strain of looking after his wife, whose health was deteriorating because of a condition called normal pressure hydrocephalus. The report said practitioners responded by supplying extra equipment, but did not inquire about further support. It was not recognised that this possible carer fatigue could have placed them both at risk. The review made recommendations for a number of organisations, including health professionals, Norfolk County Council's Social Care Department, and the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital. They identified a need for more training and more guidance around what action to be taken when patients mention Dignitas, identifying carer fatigue, and providing opportunities to ask people questions about potential domestic abuse without their partner being present. Mark Stokes, chairman of the Norfolk Community Safety Partnership, said, "The review panel and the members of the Norfolk Community Safety Partnership would like to offer their sincere condolences. This review has been undertaken in order that lessons can be learned and shared from this tragedy." The Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital said it had already made changes following the recommendations.
A hotel porter who tragically took his own life at a North Norfolk hotel was found unresponsive by a comedian who was performing at the venue. Sam Gotts died at The Grove off Overstrand Road in Cromer on Friday, December the 13th, last year. An inquest into his death heard that the 35-year-old was discovered in the swimming pool lobby by a performer who was hosting a comedy night at the hotel. In a statement to North Norfolk Coroner's Court, Judith Barras said she had intended to go for a morning swim after staying at the hotel ahead of her performance, but found Mr. Gotts unresponsive inside. She said she had noticed that the entrance pin pad to the pool lobby had been removed, but she was still able to access the pool area. It was then she found Mr. Gotts and raised the alarm with emergency services, but he was declared dead at the scene. Meanwhile, Mr. Gotts' partner and mother of his child told the court he had given little warning that he was struggling before the incident. She said, "He was a really active and present dad. He was not very outspoken or forthcoming. His behaviour around the time was normal. He obviously must have decided nothing was enough to stop the decision. There was nothing to suggest he was planning to do what he did." Yvonne Blake, area coroner for Norfolk, said the intentions of the father from Trunch near North Walsham were not clear. Giving a narrative conclusion, she said, "Sam Gotts took his own life, but there was no evidence as to his intent. It must have been a horrible shock for you all."
Ambulance bosses have spoken of how appalled they are by the sex offences committed by a former member of staff, as the victims reveal the impact of their ordeals. The East of England Ambulance Service Trust issued a statement after Jamie Kodulski was jailed for 12 years. The 24-year-old, who was found guilty of a raft of serious sexual offences against three victims, used ID cards and uniforms to give a misleading impression of his work status. A trial at Norwich Crown Court heard how Kodulski wore his NHS uniform on his Tinder profile and told women he was a paramedic. An EEAST statement said, "We are appalled at the crimes that Jamie Kodulski has been sentenced for today. Kodulski was immediately suspended when we were alerted of his arrest. Our thoughts are with the victims and all those affected by these horrific crimes. We recognise the courage it takes to come forward and speak out." The spokesman said Kodulski, who joined them in March 2023 and became a call handler in October 2023, was stood down from work when managers were alerted to his arrest in December 2023. Kodulski resigned from the trust on December 5th, 2023, ahead of a formal hearing. The spokesman insisted EEAST took its responsibility to create a safe and respectful working environment for everyone seriously. Following his trial, Kodulski of Ladysmith Road in Norwich was convicted of 2 counts of assault by penetration, 3 counts of rape and a sexual assault against the first victim. He was also found not guilty of attempting to suffocate or strangle her, and of another count of rape. He was also convicted of charges of sexual assault and assault by penetration against 2 further victims. However, he was cleared of raping a 4th woman. Imposing an extended 15-year sentence, made up of 12 years custody and 3 years on licence, Judge Anthony Bate said Kodulski had used ID cards and uniforms to give a misleading impression of his work status. He said the victims expected to be safe with Kodolsky, who he deemed to be a dangerous offender, driven by a sexual premeditation to achieve dominance over women. Norfolk Constabulary has released the moving impact statements read out in court by the three victims, who fought back tears as they revealed to Kodolsky the pain he had caused. Their statements can be read online.
An investigation has opened into the death of a retired shop owner found suffering with hypothermia. Pamela Sharp of Clifton Park in Cromer died at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital on November the 25th last year. An inquest into the 89-year-old's death was opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court this week, where post-mortem details were read out. A report compiled by pathologist Dr. Ben Swift recorded the medical cause of death as hypothermia. Area coroner Samantha Goard confirmed Mrs. Sharp's date and place of birth as January the 29th, 1935, in Islington, London. Reports have been requested from Mrs. Sharp's GP, Norfolk Police, and the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. Her family have also been asked to share a pen portrait and any concerns they may have. A full inquest to determine the official cause of death will take place in September.
A group of fire and rescue staff are set to complete a 60-mile hike across Norfolk for charity. The team of 10 from the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service hydrant team will set off from Diss on Saturday, May the 17th, and plan to finish in Wells next to sea the next day. The challenge, called the Hydrant Hike, aims to raise money for the firefighters' charity. Sam Minister Wilson, senior hydrant technician, said, "Any Norfolk resident will tell you that we're lucky to live in such a scenic county. So we thought, why not set ourselves the challenge of walking along it and raise some money at the same time? The distance we will be walking will be more than two marathons, so it's going to be a real test on all of our bodies. But it will be a huge motivation to know that we're doing it for the Firefighters Charity, who do fantastic work for firefighters and their families, and are a cause close to all of our hearts. To donate to the cause, visit their Just Giving page."
A stretch of the A149 is set to close for a series of works. Norfolk County Council has said its contractors will surface dress a section of Burnt Street in Wells next the sea this spring. The project will also see lines being painted on the road and the cat's eyes being renewed. The work will take place in stages, meaning the road will only need to be closed for a few hours at a time, between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. on April the 28th, and from 7 p.m. until 5 p.m. on May the 8th. A fully signed diversion route will be in place. The work is estimated to cost £28,000. And a man has died after a large emergency service presence was spotted in a Norfolk town. Police closed Buxton Road in Aylsham shortly after 5 p.m. on Wednesday. Several ambulance vehicles also attended, and an air ambulance was seen landing close by. A spokeswoman for the East of England Ambulance Service has now confirmed they were called to reports of somebody having a cardiac arrest at 4:56 p.m. She said one man died at the scene.
A pet shop in the heart of a Norfolk town is to go under the hammer as its owners retire. Lisa Lambert and partner Michael Adams have decided to sell Posh Pets on New Street in Holt after 35 years in business. Miss Lambert, 60, started the firm in 1991 as a dog groomer's business before turning it into a pet shop a year later. Since then, it has built up a good trade in the town, which is known for its independent shops, restaurants and pubs. Mrs. Lambert said, "We are getting old and so have decided to retire. We want to rest. It is a massive part of my world and it will not be easy. I will not know how I feel about it until the day comes. It will probably be very sad. I am happy we have served Holt well and I think we will be missed. It has been fun and I've met some lovely people and dogs. You can't replace Posh Pets. The guide price for the shop is £170,000 freehold."
Our next few news stories include a nursery school closure, another Reform UK meeting cancelled, a farmhouse which will rise from the ashes, and affordable housing nearing completion.
Shocked parents of children attending a nursery school in North Norfolk have been told that a consultation to close the site has begun. In an email sent to parents on Wednesday, it was announced that East Ruston Infant School looks set to close its doors by September. The Broad Horizons Education Trust has blamed low numbers and a lack of funding for the pending closure, saying that it cannot afford to run the nursery for children aged 2 to 4 years old. However, parents are up in arms as the rural location of the nursery is crucial for serving the local community, many of whom live on nearby farms without access to an alternative provision. There are also concerns about the infant school, which could face closure without the nursery feeding into the school. North Norfolk MP Steph Aquarone has asked for an urgent meeting with Academy trustees and has said that closing the vital nursery due to a lack of funding was unacceptable. He said, "Residents and families across North Norfolk are rightly sick to death of things being taken away from them. Cutback after cutback has left all too many feeling like services aren't working for them, and it's hard to argue that isn't the case." The proposal to close down East Ruston Nursery is the latest example of this. Yet another cherished local provision, loved by so many local families, potentially lost, with lack of funding once again cited as a key reason. "We should be providing more childcare centres, not fewer. This charming village provision offers a unique forest school environment, and I refuse to accept that this country can't afford to keep these facilities open. Parents, carers and the wider community have been given until May the 12th to submit their feedback by emailing info@bhetrust.co.uk, quoting East Ruston Nursery in the subject header."
Reform UK has been forced to cancel a meeting after the village pub where it was due to be held refused it permission. The party's North and North West Norfolk branch had hoped to use the Red Hart Inn in Bodham as a venue for meet and greets session for supporters. However, the pub's managers posted a notice on social media to say they had not given consent for the meeting and that it could not be held there. It comes weeks after a row in nearby Holt when the Town Community Centre cancelled plans for Reform to hold a gathering. Officials at the centre admitted the decision was made for political reasons and were accused of restricting free speech. A Reform spokesman declined to criticise the decision by the Red Hart, but said that there appeared to be concern among local businesses about hosting certain political events. The statement from the Red Hart said, "It has come to our attention that an event has been advertised to take place at our premises. We would like to clarify that this event was publicised without our knowledge or consent. We are not in fact hosting any such event, and the pub will in fact be closed on that day due to essential drainage works and planned power outages in the village. As a business, we remain strictly neutral and do not affiliate ourselves with any political part of activity. We appreciate your understanding and continued support." A spokesman for North and Northwest Norfolk Reform UK said, "There appears to have been a disconnect between the staff taking our booking and pub management. We understand from many anecdotal conversations with locals that there's a very real issue in Holt about losing business for expressing the wrong type of political views or even just hosting or supporting free speech. That won't last forever, as is often due to a relatively small number of intolerant individuals causing the suppression, and their time is running out. Unlike the cancellation at Holt Community Centre, whose personnel and management structure deserves further scrutiny, we don't want to speculate further on any decisions made by Red Hart management. We're all for local business, and the last thing we want to do is to impact the pub negatively. The Red Hart is a lovely pub. We'd recommend a visit, and that hasn't changed."
Restoration plans have emerged for a Norfolk farmhouse which was ravaged by a fire last year. The old hall, Market Street, in Tunstead, is set to be restored after plans were lodged with North Norfolk District Council. In December, a blaze gutted large parts of a Grade 2 listed farmhouse. The restoration plans reveal the extent of the damage, detailing that the main three-storey parts of the house were destroyed by heat and smoke damage, but retained integrity. The internal structure, floors, roof trusses and staircases were all destroyed by the blaze. 8 fire engines and 3 additional appliances were sent to the scene and spent 2 hours tackling the flames. As the building is listed, the plan is to rebuild and restore the building to the way it was before the fire. Restoration works will include the floors, roof structure, doors, windows, architraves, skirting, kitchen fittings, as well as the building's arga and ironmongery. A planning document also details that a contemporary heating and lighting system will be installed to comply with current standards, making the building more energy efficient. The plans are pending consideration with North Norfolk District Council. After the blaze, the owners of the property posted a message on Facebook saying they were all fine but heartbroken by the incident, which they said they were still trying to comprehend. One neighbour had said, "We all feared the worst. There was smoke filling the street and sky above, flames pouring out of the windows. We just couldn't believe it. It was deeply worrying. We are just all shocked by the situation and really pleased to hear nobody was hurt."
The biggest affordable housing development a North Norfolk town has seen in decades is nearly complete. developer Flagship Homes, part of Bromford Flagship, is building 24 homes at the Westwood site next to the Reef Leisure Centre in Sheringham. Senior Project Manager at Flagship Homes, Peter Woplington, said, "It's wonderful to see these homes in place, with each one to mark a new beginning for a local family. We began construction just over a year ago, so to have 24 homes come together in 12 months is an incredible achievement for everyone involved." Of the homes, 18 will be for affordable rent and allocated to families on the local housing register, with the other 6 available through Flagship's part rent, part buy shared ownership scheme. King's Lynn-based construction firm E.N. Souter and Sons is the principal contractor of the project, which also received grant funding from Homes England. Managing quantity surveyor at E.N. Souter, Steve Gould, said, "It's been an absolute pleasure working with Flagship on another lovely scheme. We've worked through everything very well together, and it's nice to see everybody so happy with these new homes." The site offers views of the picturesque Sheringham Golf Club and North Norfolk Railway's Poppy Line. Westwood will welcome its first new residents in mid-May. Councillor Wendy Fredericks, North Norfolk District Council Deputy Leader and Housing Portfolio Holder, was blown away with the quality of this site. "They will be loved and adored by the people that move in, and it's an ideal position, so close to the local facilities for everyone to enjoy. I'm incredibly impressed, and I want to see more like this built in North Norfolk," she added.
A former tourism centre on the coast could be turned into a dental surgery after it was shut down to save money. The North Norfolk Visitor Centre in Cromer was closed by the council earlier this year in a £170,000 a year cost-cutting measure. Over the years, the facility had seen a downturn in the number of visitors using the site, with more people turning to online sources of tourism-related information. After agreeing to close the venue, North Norfolk District Council began advertising the property on the open market. This resulted in 8 different businesses expressing interest in leasing it, ranging from a bakery, cafe, osteopath, real ale pub, and a shop. However, after considering the options, NNDC officials have decided to recommend turning the site into a dental surgery. The availability of dentists has been a long-standing concern in the region. In a report to councillors, officers said that option would be the best move financially. The remaining options were not considered to provide the highest level of rental income. North Norfolk District Council's cabinet members will discuss the leasing of the former tourist centre on May 6th.
A bistro nestled in the North Norfolk countryside will host a selection of live music events this week. The Glavan Bistro opened its doors in Glanford, near Holt, in December 2023, and its locally sourced menu quickly became a favourite with locals. Its owners, couple James and Karen Noon, both used to be musicians, so they launched a regular jazz club last summer, and it has been proven to be particularly popular. "I love how much local people enjoy them," Mrs. Noon said. "They give people something to do in the area, and the events don't finish late, so it makes it even more appealing. On Saturday, May the 3rd, there will be poetry from the Chalk River Poets and music from the local blues pair Joe and Mary. For £25 per person, people can enjoy entry, a chilli and a glass of wine. Tickets can be bought from the Glavan Bistro website.
A Norfolk man couldn't believe his luck when he found a fully intact Second World War gas mask while looking for driftwood on a Norfolk beach. John Aldridge had been scouring the groynes at West Runton Beach for driftwood, which he uses to make things. Suddenly, he says, something sticking out of the groin caught his attention. I said, "Oh, look, there's a shoe." I gave it a bit of a pull and thought, "Huh? This isn't a shoe. It's got two eye holes and glass on it." Suddenly, I realised, I think it's a Second World War gas mask. We got some reception on our phones and used Google Lens to identify it, and it was. It's the sort of find that makes the hairs on your arms stand up a bit. Mr. Aldridge says that further inspection of the mask gave away more details. Stamped on the glass and on the rubber is 39. So I thought, 1939, Second World War, it all makes sense. John says after some polishing up with a toothbrush to clean off some of the dirt and sand, the mask is now proudly displayed on a shelf in his house.
A closed shop is set to be converted into a flat after council officials give a planning bid the green light. An application to transform a ground floor lock-up shop to a one-bedroom flat at 2B Loudon Road in Cromer has been approved by North Norfolk District Council. The plans reveal that the space has been marketed for a year and has received little commercial interest due to its location. The works will involve minor alterations. And Christian Aid Week at St Andrew's Methodist Church starts on May the 11th with a service at 10:30 a.m. led by Sally Bossingham. The church on Cromer Road, Sheringham, will also host the popular Just Desserts event on May the 17th from 2 till 4 p.m. Organiser Josie Greenfield said, "Come and enjoy some delicious homemade desserts and puddings. Donations to Christian Aid will be appreciated." You are listening to edition number 1965 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday, the 2nd of May, 2025. Still to come, there are items about electricity and cakes, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that, there are two letters to the editor of the North Norfolk News.
Martin Braybrook of Beeston Regis PCC writes, "By kind permission of the Church PCC, local professional watercolourist John Hurst, along with his wife Jackie, will be staging a weekend exhibition at All Saints Church, Beeston Regis, with part proceeds in aid of the church. John is well known for his atmospheric, figurative paintings of the Norfolk coast, in addition to the original watercolour of the church that featured in his previous successful exhibition in the church in 2019. Jackie derives much pleasure from hand-making her delicate narrative prints depicting the Norfolk landscape and wildlife. Fine prints and greeting cards will also feature in the exhibition, along with limited copies of John's memoir, Watercolour Words, 50 Years. John will be on site throughout the exhibition to welcome visitors in his usual inimitable style, explaining his watercolour technique and sharing stories. Entry is free, there is ample free parking, and refreshments will be available throughout the weekend. The exhibition will be open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday the 3rd of May and Monday the 5th of May and from noon to 4 p.m. on Sunday the 4th of May. For further details, visit www.marshlandarts.co.uk.
Jim Cobb of Hoverton writes, I see Norfolk County Council are proposing to switch off 1,000 streetlights. The case for the installation of lights on main roads is that it is known to reduce road accidents by about 30%. So, if you switch them off, you must expect an increase in accidents. It's an accounting problem. The cost of lighting is borne by the council, but the cost of the accidents falls on the NHS, plus the victims and their families. On residential roads, the lighting is to reduce crime. Once again, the cost of the lighting goes to the council, and the cost of the crime goes to the pedestrians and residents, making it someone else's problem.
Next, we turn to the local events page. On Sunday the 4th of May, there are a selection of events. For the early birds, starting at 5 a.m, a dawn chorus and breakfast walk is taking place at the Norfolk Wildlife Trust's Clye Marshes Visitor Centre, Clye Next the Sea. Prices range from £11.55 to £13.70. Contact 01603 625 540. From 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m, the Trimmingham Tabletop Sale will offer light refreshments and a range of bric-a-brac and books for sale. To be held at the Pilgrim Shelter, Loop Road, Church Street, Trimmingham. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, there is the RAF Bertram Newton Heritage Centre Open Day. Contact 01485 528 286. From 1 p.m. to 5 p.m, the Stody Family Fun Day is being held. Entry is £9, with under 12s free. Contact 01263 860 572. And from Thursday the 8th to Sunday the 11th of May are a range of events being staged by the Sheringham Muzilac Town Twinning Association. Free events during the day with paid events in the evening. Find out more at sheringhammuzilac.wordpress.com.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we cast our minds back 80 years to the end of World War II, with a poem, some stories from those who were there, our monthly visit to Book Corner, and an interview with a wartime enthusiast.
Let's begin with excerpts from a VE Day 40th anniversary edition of the Lynn News and Advertiser, published on May the 7th, 1985. With recollections of that time, we have a poem called 40 Years Ago, written by Stan Brett from Chingford in Essex, who was a war evacuee in Brancaster. Coupons for your clothing, coupons for your cheese, ration books and gas masks, and of course, evacuees. Anxious, frowning faces, morale was really low. Sacrifices made by all, 40 years ago. Mothers, wives and girlfriends saw their loved ones depart. Some never to be seen again, caused many a broken heart. Women at the factory bench, land girls on the hoe, kept the nation going 40 years ago. Dorniers and Heinkels droning through the night to Coventry, London, Portsmouth, where innocents cowered in fright. They dropped their bombs and left behind a flaming scarlet glow. Then scampered back to Adolf 40 years ago. Tuppence for a postage stamp, eightpence for your bread, a shilling for 10 woodbines, spam and powdered egg. Chewing gum and nylons supplied by G.I. Joe. Charlie Chad made do and mend 40 years ago. Flanagan and Allen, Max Miller, Vera Lynn, the sweetheart of the forces who sang We'll Meet Again. Braving bombs and bullets to perform an ENSA show, providing entertainment 40 years ago. Church parades on Sundays, military affairs, everyone attended, offering their prayers, that war would soon be over, both for friend and foe. Those prayers thankfully answered 40 years ago.
Continuing with excerpts from the VE Day 40th Anniversary Edition of the Lynn News and Advertiser, published on May the 7th, 1985, we have two memories from the time. Mr. R. Sanford of 61 Tamarisk, Pandora Meadows, Gaywood, recalls that on VE Day, the destroyer in which he was serving, HMS Rotherham, was in the Indian Ocean, returning from a carrier strike on Carnicoba Airfield in the Andaman Sea, which was occupied by Japanese forces. When the signal was received that the war in Europe was over, the ship's company were jubilant. Two battleships, three cruisers, four aircraft carriers, and seven destroyers held services of thanksgiving on the upper deck. Shortly afterwards, another signal was received from King George VI, which read, "To all ships and establishments, splice the main brace," which of course meant a double issue of rum. Our celebrations were to be held the following day when we arrived at Trincomalee, the naval base in Ceylon. But it was not to be. A signal was flashed around the fleet that the Japanese heavy cruiser Haguro and her destroyer escort Kamikaze were loose in the Indian Ocean. After refueling and taking on supplies, every available ship, 16 in all, left in pursuit of the enemy. After a 10-day chase, the cruiser was eventually sunk by the 26th destroyer flotilla in the Malacca Straits. The Japanese destroyer escaped and made her way back to her base in Singapore. Our celebration eventually came 3 months later, on September the 2nd, VJ Day, victory over Japan. Mr. F. Hall of 21 Willow Drive, Clenchwarton, recalls that he was in Germany when VE Day was declared. Towards the end of April, the Guards Armoured Division, of which I was a member, was advancing in the direction of Cuxhaven, situated on the coast between Bremen and Hamburg. Advancement was erratic, and we met only isolated pockets of resistance, with the rumour that the end was near. However, this was not accepted after our experience in the liberation of Brussels. That was on September the 3rd of the previous year, And it transpired that we had another winter to spend in Northwest Europe. On April the 26th, we were in Zeven, and on May the 8th in Cadenberg. The end of hostilities was not fully appreciated, as we were in a foreign land with Germans in the immediate vicinity. We were still fully on the alert and unable to celebrate in any way. In any case, we were short of supplies with which to celebrate. However, we were all very pleased and awaited the next move. Would it be a return to dear old Blighty? In my case, and many others, it was not so, and I didn't return to England, except for leave, until July of the following year. I might add that all our tanks were handed over at Rothenburg Airfield on June the 9th, 1945, and we then became members of the Guards Division. I am still in possession of the programme for the Farewell to Armour parade.
For our next item, Pat Troop, an RAF flight mechanic during World War II, recalls the day she gained entry to Hitler's bunker. This article is from the Airmail magazine of the Royal Air Force Association, dated Winter 2023. It was September 1946, and I was stationed at RAF Gattau in Berlin, when my German colleague Ruth and I decided we would attempt to visit Hitler's bunker. To get there, we had to go through the ruins of the Reich Chancellery. It must once have been a beautiful building with lofty and spacious rooms, now very badly damaged. We eventually reached the entrance to the bunker, which looked just like any other air raid shelter. We were now in the Russian sector of Berlin, and two Russian soldiers were on guard. They tried, and failed, to look smart when they saw us approaching. We couldn't communicate, but eventually they understood that we wanted to take a photograph with them, and they seemed happy to oblige. Thinking this might endear us to our new friends, we tried to pass through the entrance, but a rifle and a body suddenly barred our way. The guard started to speak in Russian, and it was obvious that he wanted something before he would let us pass. At that moment, a German policeman appeared and told us that they needed a pass with a signature. Apparently, to a Russian, a signature meant everything. Though we didn't have one, an idea suddenly struck me. Gambling that any official-looking signed document might work, I took a hairdressing chit from my bag. The guard examined the very nice signature, then let us through. We descended a concrete staircase. On the walls, hundreds of people had left their scribbled signatures, and I couldn't resist adding mine. The bunker was extensive, containing a living room, dining room, drinking room, telephone exchange, bathroom, and three or four bedrooms. When we reached the end of the staircase, there was a long corridor that contained two beds for guards. The first room we entered was the drinking room, where Hitler and his friends no doubt made merry during many an air raid. The next room was Hitler's bedroom, which contained an already blown safe. The carpet on the floor had been cut to pieces, no doubt by souvenir gatherers, and I took a piece myself. The adjacent bathroom had been completely stripped of all its fittings, but some tiles were still on the walls. Again, I decided to take a piece as a souvenir. Hitler had a small room for his dog, Blondie, off his bedroom, and I was shocked to see the bones and outline of the dog's body, which had been burnt. We went through the remainder of the rooms, all very much in the same state, and came to the surgery, which appeared to have plenty of modern equipment. Having completed our tour of the bunker, we came back to the surface again and saw the area where the bodies of Hitler, Eva Braun, and others had been burned. You could still see teeth, false or otherwise, lying on the ground. petrol cans lay cordoned off nearby. As we headed back towards the Chancellery, a man appeared. He offered to exchange a medal for cigarettes, which were in many ways the currency in Berlin at the time. I accepted, and later found the medal to be a gold cross of honour of the German mother, awarded to any German mother who had produced 8 or more children for the Reich.
To mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day, this month's Book Corner focuses on some of the people who lived through World War II. Our first book choice is 1945, Victory in the West, by acclaimed military historian Peter Caddick Abdams. It's March 1945. Allied troops are poised to cross the Rhine and sweep on into Germany. Victory is finally within their grasp. The closing stages of the Allies' fight against Nazi Germany are expertly brought to life using details from a vast range of memoirs and interviews with survivors, which give a vivid sense of what it was really like to encounter enemy combatants and civilians face to face. This book is compulsively readable. The next book we have chosen this month, by Patricia and Jean Outram, is called Code-Breaking Sisters, Our Secret War. In 1939, during the nation's hour of need, Patricia and Jean answered the call of duty. With their fierce intelligence and steely determination, these remarkable young women stopped at nothing to help crack the Enigma Code, support Allied troops and defeat the Nazis. Their top secret mission helped to turn the tide of war in Britain's favour. This is their incredible true story. Susan Goodman was only a child during World War II. When she appealed for wartime stories from her peers, the response was overwhelming. In her book, Children of War, Susan has woven the responses she received into a rich tapestry which reflects life in World War II through the eyes of children. The book is nostalgic, amusing, everyday, and tragic. The next books we have chosen for you look at two legends of the Second World War. Reach for the Sky, by Paul Brickhill, is about Douglas Bader, who was a legend in his lifetime and remains one today, over 100 years after his birth. A charismatic leader and fearless pilot, he refused to let his severe disability, the loss of both legs in a flying accident, ground him. Bader the hero was at times a difficult, overbearing man, but his strengths far outweighed his weaknesses, and his place in the annals of British history is secure. Our final book choice is Some Sunny Day, by Vera Lynn. The Force's Sweetheart describes how she toured India, Burma and Egypt during the war, entertaining the troops and maintaining their connection with home. She paints a vivid portrait of Britain at war, as well as her own iconic role in the struggle. All of these books can be borrowed from Calibre Audio Library, either on memory stick, MP3 or even listened to on the internet. You can also borrow or request these audiobooks or listen to them on the internet from Norfolk County Libraries.
To finish off this edition of the magazine, we have a report from the latest additions to our roving reporter team, mother and daughter Emma and Beatrice Clark, as they hear about one of Norfolk's wartime heroes.
Good afternoon. This is Emma.
And Bea.
Your roving reporters for the Mardler Talking newspaper. We have the pleasure of introducing Nobby Clark in a VE Day special, Remembering a Norfolk Hero.
Stand by.
Hello, Nobby. Can you tell us about your Jeep?
The Jeep is a Ford with a Willys engine from 1943, so it's over 80 years old, and it's in the configuration of a regiment called the Special Air Service.
Who is Arthur Wood?
Arthur Wood was my teacher at school in Norwich in the 60s, and he taught me maths and metalwork. But he never talked about the war until I came back many, many years later.
Was he involved with the Second World War?
He certainly was. Arthur joined the Norfolk Regiment and trained in Aylsham in Norfolk, and then he was on guard duty in Coltishall RAF base. But he got a bit fed up with that, so he then volunteered for a signal unit. But this was a group called Phantom, and they moved to Scotland with the commandos to train.
How did he train for D-Day?
They trained in Scotland with the commandos, and then they did a parachute course near Manchester at Ringway. So Arthur got the SAS wings, and he also got the parachute wings.
Can you tell us about his mission?
His mission started in May 1944. They then moved to Fairford, an airfield down south, just before D-Day. And on the 10th of June, a few days after D-Day invasion, Arthur was parachuted into France, 120 miles southwest of Paris, on an operation called Houndsworth with the SAS.
Can you tell us about the operation?
The operation was quite successful. They did land five of them in the individual woods in pouring rain. They got lost for a few days, but they fought with the Mackie and the French resistance for 3 months. They survived, and they were quite successful in cutting all the supply lines, railway and road and air, by the Germans who were reinforcing the D-Day bridgehead. Paddy Maine then drove over in September after they'd been there since June the 10th, and they all drove back to Arromanches, and they shipped back over to England and regrouped, and then were sent back into Germany to carry on fighting. After Germany, they moved across to Norway. Another operation called Bull Basket, which had at least four or five Norfolk lads, was not so successful, and they were captured and shot. But there was a survivor called John Fielding, who came back to Norwich, and he was a Norfolk magistrate for many, many years.
What did he do after the war?
After the war, he married his girlfriend Mary in Gretna Green, and they ran away to get married. He then came back down south, moved into Norwich, and lived in Old Cossey, and he was a teacher at the Hewitt School in the Hall Road in the 60s and 70s, where he taught me mathematics and metalwork.
Where did he meet Odette Churchill?
Odette Churchill was a secret agent in SOE, Special Operations Executive, and Arthur and his brother, who was in Three Para, met Odette. They got together at the party, and they were all awarded their medals. And Arthur was mentioned in dispatches, and he got the Coeur de Guerre, the top medal from France, for his successful mission.
Can you briefly tell us about Odette's role in the Second World War?
Odette was in SOE. She was a secret agent and related to Churchill. She was captured, but she was extremely lucky. She did survive, and she came back, unlike many of the other lady agents that were killed and captured.
So when did Shippy talk to you about the war?
I came back to the British Legion in Norwich and also the D-Day Veterans run by Jack Woods. And Arthur was a treasurer quite some time ago, but he didn't talk about anything. Said to him, "Well, Arthur, what did you do in the war?" He said, "Well, my boy, you buy me lunch and I'll tell you all about it." And we went to a pub and we found one of his old mates who was living in Staffordshire called Joe Owen, who was on an operation called Leuton. And again, unfortunately, that operation was a disaster. And again, 30 members of the SAS were executed. But we got them together, had a meal, and they were like two 18-year-olds talking away. And old Len leant over to Arthur and he said, "Boy, oh boy," he said, "you old Norfolk Spud Basher, are you still alive?" And he said, "Yes, I am, my boy." And on one of the operations, they actually found Rommel in a chateau hiding. But by the time they called it an airstrike, Rommel had moved on. The Hewitt School was really good. He said you were useless at maths, but you were pretty good at metalwork.
That's really fascinating. Thanks so much, Nobby, for sharing the history of Arthur Wood and your Jeep with us. And if people would like to see the Jeep, you will be there celebrating VE Day in Elsham on Sunday the 11th?
That's correct. Hopefully we'll have the Jeep there and a wartime motorbike and also a copy of the SAS War Diary that lists all the operations from day one in the desert right through to Norway.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include a 200-acre solar farm gets the go-ahead, river plans abandoned due to warblers, concern for foxes and badgers over bungalow building bid, and a farmer's diversification plans stalled by council.
A solar farm on acres of agricultural land has been given the go-ahead despite scores of objections. Broadland District Council, BDC, granted permission to developers Albanwise Limited for the 200-acre solar farm and battery storage unit in Pettywell near Reefham. Members of the Council's Planning Committee voted by 4-3 to grant a temporary 40-year permission for the scheme off Nowhere Lane. Officers at BDC had recommended approval despite receiving more than 80 objections from individuals and organisations concerned about issues such as the scale of the development, increased traffic, the loss of agricultural land, and safety concerns over lithium-ion batteries. Conservative councillor Joe Copplestone, who represents Coltishall, has proposed that the solar farm be turned down. She said, "I have some very grave concerns about this site. This is very beautiful countryside, right next to the Georgian market town of Reefham. This also borders 900 metres of Marriott's Way, which is an important part of our green infrastructure. There could be harm done to local businesses and local tourism. I think there will be an adverse impact on the local area and the countryside." Reefham Town Council had objected to the plans, while Conservative Greg Peck, County Councillor for Reefham, spoke against them. Mr. Peck said, "This application is in the wrong place, too large, and would destroy good quality productive farmland, as well as some wonderful Norfolk countryside and wildlife habitat." But the proposal to reject the application was turned down. The Planning Committee's Liberal Democrat chairman, Caroline Karimi-Gavandlo, said, "We have to look at this in planning terms. I understand it's quite an emotive subject with Reefham being so close." What the developers said, Chris Banks from Albanwise said the company had been farming in Norfolk for nearly 50 years. He said there was a fundamental need to move away from fossil fuels to generate electricity, so the scheme would contribute to the shift to greener energy. Mr. Banks said it would generate enough energy to serve 14,000 homes a year and would offset nearly 6,500 tonnes of carbon annually. The application is one of a string of solar farms proposed for Norfolk in recent months. Developers say the farms are needed to provide green energy, but critics, including Norfolk County Council leader Kay Mason Billig, have said they should be resisted.
A bid to widen a river on the Norfolk Broads to make space for 16 new moorings has been scrapped after concerns were raised over the impact on wildlife. Wayford Marina had unveiled grand plans for the new stern-on moorings at its site on the River Ant near Stalham. It also wanted to create new boardwalks and pontoons. It has sought permission from the Broads Authority to carry out the work, which involved excavating the bank to create a new basin, but has now withdrawn its application. The bid had prompted objections, with fears raised about the environmental impact. One ecologist wrote, "The proposed mooring basin would result in the removal of a block of previous reed bed and scrub, causing fragmentation and the loss of habitat for a range of warblers known to use the local area." There were also concerns from the Environment Agency, which pointed out that the excavations would likely have an impact on fish populations. It said the proposed development site is located on a main river. It is therefore likely to be directly in the migratory route for European eels and river lamprey. In addition to these protected species, coarse fish species will also be present. These species include, but are not limited to, pike, bream, roach, perch, tench, and rudd. The risk to fish populations increases significantly at specific times of the year. Coarse fish spawning takes place from the 15th of March to the 15th of June inclusive, and piling works will likely cause significant disruption through noise and vibrations. However, the Broad Society supported the scheme, as did a local councillor. The proposals would not have increased the total number of 79 moorings at the marina.
A bungalow bid for a patch of scrubland in one of Norfolk's largest towns has sparked ecological concerns. Plans lodged to build 8 bungalows in North Walsham on land off Cherry Tree Lane have been met with concerns from neighbours that the development could see wildlife in the area disappear. Neighbours have submitted written objections to North Norfolk District Council, expressing their concerns about the damage that the proposed development could cause to animals such as foxes and badgers. One said, "My hedge currently serves as part of a wildlife corridor, regularly used by badgers, deer and foxes. Replacing this green boundary with new gardens and fences and removing adjacent wild space risks severing this corridor, fragmenting habitats and harming local wildlife." Another added, "All the properties in the vicinity enjoy the location and the wildlife that occupies this proposed site. The many trees, shrubs and undergrowth support a good mix of common birds, and they return to their nesting boxes every year. Owls, buzzards and sparrowhawks are also regularly seen. We often have visiting pheasants and squirrels in our garden. Badgers, foxes, muntjac deer and bats can be seen particularly at dawn or dusk. If this green space is lost to development, the wildlife will disappear with it." If approved, there would be 3-bedroom bungalows built on old garden space of number 33 Cherry Tree Lane, which is currently scrubland. The 8 properties would be accessed off a new private road, with each bungalow having its own garage. The site is located on the western edge of North Walsham. Currently, the council is also considering plans submitted by Richborough and Robert Claiborne, which could see 330 houses and a 60-bed care home built in the town.
A wildlife lover's efforts to diversify his family farm and continue his father's legacy have been stalled after planning officials rejected a bid to double the size of a caravan park. Sean Meal's plans to continue transforming Grange Farm in Lessingham into a wildlife haven have seen North Norfolk District Council reject his bid to increase accommodation on his caravan park. The council refused plans to change the certified exempted site for the Caravan and Motorhome Club, comprising 5 pitches, to a touring caravan site for 10 pitches, as it said the site is in a flood risk zone. The council's report also said the application failed to demonstrate that the changes would not cause recreational disturbance. This has put the brakes on Mr. Meal's plans to use the additional revenue to help fund the farm's continuing diversification. Mr. Meal, 52, said, "It is making it difficult. It just delays things a bit further. I want to work with the council. Once I have more guidance and advice, that will help." Mr. Meal also added, "The site is only open during the summer and the area has not flooded since 1953. He also pointed out that bringing the site up to a 10-pitch facility would result in no changes made to the land, as Mr. Meal already has 16 hookups for vans to use during their stay. He says he could host up to 30 vans on his site, but chooses to keep numbers down to make it more enjoyable for his guests. He added, "It is only a small farm. I am passionate about creating new wildlife habitats for the holiday guests to enjoy, as well as attracting wildlife photographers and hopefully school groups in the future." Grange Farm is located between the RSPB's reserve at Clye and the Mere at Horsey. Mr. Meal hopes that Grange Farm could bridge a wildlife tourism gap in this part of the county. Grange Farm has been in the Meal family for over 50 years. Sean Meal's father, James, ran the site as a pig farm from the early 1970s to the mid-2000s. At one time, it housed 1,800 pigs. In the 2000s, the farm began to diversify through barn developments, the introduction of holiday leds, and planting a small wood referred to as Millennium Wood. James Meal died in 2010. To date, Mr. Meal has recorded 9 different bat species, 455 moth species, and 90 bird species. He also received funding from Countryside Stewardship, a government conservation initiative, to make the whole farm nature-friendly ecotourism site in 2021. He also successfully applied for a Farming in Protected Landscapes grant from the Broads Authority to increase biodiversity on the site and provide a wildlife area for visitors to access.
Train spotters will be offered the rare opportunity to jump on board the Cromer lifeboat locomotive. North Norfolk Railway has announced that 66715 Cromer Lifeboat is the latest addition to the Rails and Ales event running on June the 13th to the 15th. The train was initially built in Canada and entered the UK in 2003 to haul heavy goods trains across the national network. The smart blue and yellow rail bus rarely hauls passenger trains, so its features will offer something different for guests. GB Rail Freight, GBRF, owns the locomotive that was named in honour of the lifeboat station and is known for regularly giving support to the North Norfolk Railway. Visitor experience and marketing manager Hannah Drury said, "We are delighted to hear that GBRF were able to support this year's Rails and Ales event and are very thankful to be welcoming a locomotive that has not only hauled relatively few passenger trains, but one with such a local link that is close to many people's hearts." A variety of the line's home fleets, steam and diesel locomotives will also be out each day, providing visitors with a wide variety of rail power to ride behind to mark the Lion's golden anniversary.
A popular stage musical is set to be shown in independent cinemas across the county, including in King's Lynn. The Majestic and the Corn Exchange will show the musical theatre adaptation of Bonnie and Clyde. The musical is part of a series called The World's Greatest Stage Musicals in Cinema, which brings theatre productions into local cinemas. Bonnie and Clyde, the musical, will be shown on May the 1st and May the 4th. The series aims to provide an engaging experience for both regular theatre-goers and newcomers, offering a blend of music, drama and performance. The shows will be displayed in high definition on cinema screens paired with advanced sound technology. Tickets for the performances, as well as a complete list of showings and locations, can be found at bigscreenmusicals.com. The series will be shown in more than 500 cinemas across the UK, including the Majestic and Corn Exchange in King's Lynn.
An estate in Norfolk has featured in a list of the UK's top seven National Trust sites. The Blickling Estate, near Aylsham, has been named by The Times as the fourth best location to visit in the UK. The list also includes Hilltop in Cumbria, the house that Beatrix Potter grew up in, and Petworth House and Park in West Sussex, the grounds and sunsets of which inspired artist J.M.W. Turner. The estate is the birthplace of Anne Boleyn, and royal connections, from King Harold to Catherine the Great, can be traced back from the hall. The publication recommends that visitors spend hours poring over the 12,500 books, manuscripts, atlases and pamphlets in the ornate Long Gallery Library, established in 1742. Also explore the on-site Norwich Printing Museum, which continues the literary theme with its nostalgic array of lead, ink and iron apparatus. The article continues to recommend Holcombe for a stroll on the beach and a stay at the Host Arms in nearby Burnham Market. Norfolk is home to four estates run by the charity, including Felbrigg Hall and Oxborough Hall.
A popular campsite in North Norfolk has been named among England's best by a major camping and clothing retailer. Galley Hill Farm Camping near Blakeney has featured in the prestigious list, which also outlined the best pet-friendly campsites and the best festival campsites. National retailer Go Outdoors has analysed several different criteria, including the average temperature during the summer, the cost of a three-night stay, and the percentage of people who would recommend the site, to compile a final list. Galley Hill campsite came in fifth place nationally, pipped to the post by sites in Cornwall and North Yorkshire. The holiday spot is the cheapest on the list, with three nights costing campers £60, and also the warmest on average, reaching temperatures of around 16.5 degrees centigrade. While there is no on-site shop, the campsite scored an average rating of 4.87 out of 5, and 98% of visitors recommending the site to friends and family. The site is a short walk from Blakeney Quay and has glamping options and electric hookup pitches available.
Our last few articles cover an electric bus, electricity issues solved for a new restaurant, Thursford Gala returns, and crafty cakes in Cromer.
A bus company serving the North Norfolk area and beyond has announced it is dipping a toe into the future with a smart new bit of kit. Sanders Coaches has announced it is trialling a new fully electric Volvo BZL bus in its fleet. The vehicle has been traversing the Coasthopper CH1 between Wells Next to Sea and Cromer, with enthusiasts spotting the new vehicle along its route. Charles Sanders, managing director of the company, said, "It has come from Volvo and we have got it for a couple of weeks for a trial and evaluation. They offered us the opportunity to try it and we thought we would take it because it is the future." However, Mr. Sanders also pointed out there were things to consider with switching to electric, such as the range of the vehicles and their capacity. Because of the weight of the batteries, the buses carry less people, carrying around 31 people instead of the usual 38 found on a diesel bus. A diesel bus will also have additional standing passengers. Mr. Sanders said, "I had turned them down before, but now we have to start thinking ahead. We use low-emission diesel engines, which hardly read up when tested, but when you buy a vehicle, you expect to get about 15 to 20 years, and we have to start thinking about the future." Mr. Sanders also added that if the company were to take on a fleet of electric buses, there would have to be considerable infrastructure works done to facilitate their use. He added, "If we did take them on, it would be a massive investment." Sanders Coaches was formed in 1975 by Norman and Gladys Sanders, with five vehicles in operation based in Holt. Their sons, Paul and Charles Sanders, now run the fleet, which has grown to more than 90 vehicles, with three depots covering local bus services and private coach hire. The new coach has been sighted by Sanders bus and coach enthusiasts on its route, who have discussed the new bus on their Facebook page. One person said, "What a beautiful bus the BZL is, the only electric vehicle I approve of." Another said, "Looks quite stylish actually. Hope it's something they consider in the future."
A street food business has announced a new opening date after its launch was halted following power issues. Curbside Kitchen in North Walsham recently transformed its trailer into an urban-style eatery and was set to open its newest Cromer restaurant on March the 28th. The family-run business renovated the former Breakers Cafe, but was unable to open the new restaurant due to the site having no power. Sean Moore, who runs Curbside Kitchens, claimed he paid YU Energy £6,500 to cover the previous energy usage at the building, and he was expecting power to be restored at the site before the launch date. But he was told by the company that it could take up to 28 days for the building to be reconnected, a month past the original opening date. Mr. Moore described the company to be dragging their feet since paying the money. "The emotional side has been tenfold," he added. "I am still dealing with the PTSD from my car accident, and we have been working non-stop to make sure it goes to plan." The restaurant will now be opening to the public on May the 2nd. Mr. Moore said, "Despite having no power during renovations, we are really happy with the end result and have already received great feedback from those who have seen snippets."
For the fifth year running, thousands will flock to a North Norfolk attraction as a popular day out makes a highly anticipated return. The Thursford Collection near Fakenham in North Norfolk will once again be hosting its Gala Day, which sells out annually. On July the 6th, ticket holders will be able to enjoy a spectacle of steam engines, mechanical organs and vintage vehicles, including classic cars and aircraft. This year, there will be the biggest variety of exhibitors ever, with around 200 heading to the venue for the day, and some are expected to take part in a steam parade around Thursford car park. Vintage fairground rides, face painting and a mini fun fair will keep children entertained, with local foodie vendors including the Bucket List. Another new addition for 2025 will be a brand new aerobatic display from the Starlings, who will be taking to the skies with their smoke-fueled Extra NG aircraft. To celebrate 45 years at the collection, renowned organist Robert Wolfe will play three special performances throughout the day. Wolfe began his tenure as resident organist at Thursford in June 1981, aged 19. "We're excited to reveal the details of our fifth Gala Day event," said Charlie Cushing, general manager of Thursford. "With more exhibitors than ever before, new food vendors and an exciting aerobatic display, this year is set to be another exciting addition to Thursford's calendar of events. We can't wait to celebrate with everyone this July." The Thursford Collection is home to the world-famous Christmas Spectacular, Santa's Magical Journey, and the world's largest collection of steam engines and organs. Tickets will be available online on the Thursford website. They are priced at £15, with under-12s going free.
A bakery brand in North Norfolk has announced the newest addition to its growing business. The Craft Cakery will open on May the 3rd at 10 a.m. next door to the Craft Bakery's Chrome Shop on Church Street. The spot will be a one-stop shop for baking necessities and accessories, as well as simple cakes for budding bakers to decorate themselves at home. The Craft Cakery is run by husband and wife team Paul and Laura Thomas, who also run the Craft Bakery, which has shops in Sheringham, Cromer, Munsley and North Walsham. Laura Thomas, co-owner of the Craft Cakery, said, "We're so excited to open the doors to the Craft Cakery and share our love of baking with the local community here in Cromer. Whether you're popping in for a last-minute ingredient, want to personalise a cake from the Craft Bakery or a supermarket, or if you're looking for inspiration for your next showstopper, we've got something for bakers of all ages and experience. We can't wait to welcome families over the bank holiday weekend and see what everyone creates. To minimise waste, the Craft Cakery will let customers buy exactly the amount of ingredients they need. This idea came from bakery customers who said they wanted to try new recipes at home without ending up with half-used bags of flour or obscure extras gathering dust at the back of the cupboard. If there is a celebration on the horizon, the cakery will also be an order point for bespoke cakes and cupcakes with a catalogue of designs to choose from for inspiration. Customers can also take the stress out of their own homemade cakes by ordering a plain sponge to collect from the cakery and then just pop in and pick out their favourite finishing touches. The first 20 customers through the door on Saturday and Sunday will get a free treat with their purchases.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Watterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send your new editions each week. So, please, remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Wilson. Editing and producing this issue were Chris and Lorna Wilson, assisted by Astrid Welfare. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health. And we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio!